Namo Most venerable sharers, Bhikkhure Buddhamma, Sharyu Kole, and my Dhamma friends, Dhamma brothers and sisters, I feel so happy whenever I visit my motherland. I feel so happy, like a child coming and sitting on the lap of the mother. I very much like to come again and again to my motherland. Rather, I would like to spend the rest of my life on my motherland. But I have great responsibility. I have to serve the humanity as a representative of my teacher, Sayaji Ubakhin. But the memory of my mother name remains quite constant in my mind. I get so much inspiration, I get so much Dhamma strength whenever I remember my motherland. The motherland where I was born, not only once, but twice in this very life. And this second birth was a real birth which made the life, human life, worthwhile. And today, when I am here with you all, my memory goes back to my close friend Sayaji Ubalwin. Very often we used to meet and discuss on various subjects pertaining to the society. I remember one day he pressed me, "Goenka, you have to give me one of your sons. Give me one of your sons. Send one of your sons to this school." And I offered him my son, Maung Shwe, and he got education in this institute. I was so pleased to offer my son to come and study in this institute. I remember in those days and even today, I had a feeling of great shame and a feeling of great unhappiness that though born in this country, lived so many years in this country, yet I cannot give a Dhamma talk, a public talk in the language of this country with proper pronunciation. Sitting on the dais of this educational institute, I remember my school days. In those days, under the British colonial educational system, there was the policy that one has to take 2 papers of Burmese language, which was very high Burmese language, or otherwise a low standard of Burmese language plus any vernacular language, any other Indian language. That was the policy of the government those days. I was studying an Indian so-called Anglo-vernacular school called Khalsa School. Our school was a middle school. It was recognized for middle school education, but the management wanted it to make it a high school. The government did not give them permission, but they said the first batch, you continue to teach up to the 10th standard, matric standard. The first batch, if the result comes good, then we will register you as a high school. I was in 9th standard in those days, and my age was 14 years. And it so happened that from very childhood, I had a very kind teacher, a Hindi teacher, who taught me very high standard Hindi from the very young age. At that age of 14 years, I wrote an article which got published in a Hindi weekly which used to be published from Rangoon, Yangon. And as a young boy, I felt very high of myself. Look, my article has been published in such a reputed weekly, Hindi weekly. So out of madness, I kept that article, that magazine, on my desk so that others can also see that, look, my article has been published in such a reputed magazine. When my teacher entered, he saw the magazine, he saw my name on that article, took and read a few lines. He didn't believe that I have written it. There was one Sanskrit quotation also in this article. This young boy, how can it be true that he wrote such an article? He thought, I must have copied it from somewhere and I have fooled the editor who published it. So he asked me, will you write an article on the subject that I give you now? I said, yes, sir. And he gave me a subject and asked me to write the article within 1 hour. I wrote it. He read it. He was so impressed. He said, your Hindi is so high, then you must take Hindi as a second language in your matric examination. He was hopeful that if I take Hindi as the second language, then the Burmese will be a very low grade Burmese and I will get high marks in Burmese as well as in Hindi. And that will help the institute so that one of the students gets very high marks in total. And yes, it so happened in the matric examination, I got very high marks. I was one of the 11 students, highest mark student in the country. I was given scholarship and our school was registered. But it was quite harmful for me because I missed higher Burmese. Therefore, I feel sorry that my Burmese language is very weak, but that also, perhaps Dhamma wanted it that way. the Dhamma wanted me to serve my Dhamma father Syaji Ubakhin and take back the invaluable jewel of Dhamma to the country of origin. And I would not have been successful if I was not very smart in Hindi language. Therefore, on the one hand, I missed higher Myanmar language, but on the other hand, the higher Hindi language helped me to serve my teacher. When I review my life, I find so many astonishing things have happened throughout my life, unbelievable. 125 years ago, a young man from the desert of India, Rajasthan, comes all the way in search of new pasture lands for his livelihood and doesn't settle down in Bihar or in Bengal. He comes all the way to Myanmar and settles down here. There was some meaning behind that, some purpose behind that. If he had not settled down in this Dhamma land, how could I have been born here? My Syaji Ubakhin used to say that he is a guided missile. Things are happening because the Parmi Devas want them to happen like this. So also I feel that I am a guided missile and things are happening because Dhamma wants it to happen like this. And when I see why I was born in a Hindu family and a very conservative Hindu family, there was reason behind that. On the one hand, being born in a very religious-minded family, I had the background of religion, of spirituality, to have a high character. All those things were there because I was born in such a family. This helped me later on when taking Vipassana, when my teacher wanted me to go and spread Dhamma in the country of origin. This background of being born and bred, brought up in the Hindu atmosphere helped me so much. I could understand the Hindu psyche very properly, the Hindu culture very properly, the Hindu spirituality very properly. From very young age, from the child age, as many Hindus have great respect for Buddha because he is taken as the incarnation of God Almighty Vishnu. I also had the same feeling, had great respect for Gautama the Buddha being incarnation of Vishnu. But then there was one big difficulty. Like many others, I was also trained that Buddha is great, but his teaching is not good. One should not go for the teaching of the Buddha. So for my age, up to the age of 31, when I came in contact with Vipassana, I had never read, I had never heard any teaching of Buddha anywhere, though born in a land of Buddha Dhamma. But due to certain circumstances, I had to take a course of 10 days, although hesitatingly. And when I passed through these 10 days, I found the teaching so pure, so rational, so scientific, so result-oriented, that I started wondering why people from my society condemned the teaching of Buddha. Again, it all happened just to help me to study both the scriptures of the Buddha and the scriptures of the Hindu community. Otherwise, having got benefited from one 10-day course, got relieved of the migraine headache, I would not have cared to go through the scriptures, the Pariyatti. That is why I say things are happening because Dhamma wants it to happen that way. And then a situation arose where I was relieved of all the responsibilities of running the business, the trade, the industry, and I was quite free to study under my teacher, the Paryati as well as Patipatti. Those 5 years of my life were golden years. I made best use of those 5 years, which helped me to spread Dhamma not only in the country of origin, but around the world. Large number of people from different community, from different religious background, started coming to these 10-day courses. That helped me to study and understand the various religious traditions of the world. And making a comparative study, I became so confident that there is nothing like Buddha's teaching. This does not mean that I condemn the teachings of other religions. They are wonderful. But when I compare, I wonder how much depth Buddha has gone for the same teaching that we find in other religions also. The first step of the teaching of Dhamma is found everywhere. Sila, morality. There is no religion in the world which is not teaching to live the life of morality. Every religion teaches live a moral life because you are a human being and human society, you are living in the human society, you have responsibility towards others, so don't perform any action, physical or vocal, which will disturb the peace and harmony of other beings. This teaching is everywhere. Everyone understands that I am obliging other members of the society when I live a life of morality. But Buddha says, you are obliging yourself first by living the life of morality. One practices vipassana and goes deeper, one understands that I cannot perform any unwholesome action which will harm others, I cannot perform unless first I have harmed myself. It becomes very clear that whenever I perform any unwholesome action, physical or vocal, I have to generate some impurity or the other in my mind. Otherwise, I can't perform unwholesome action. If I kill somebody, I have to generate tremendous amount of anger, hatred, ill will, animosity. Then only I can kill somebody, otherwise not. And with the teaching of Vipassana, it becomes so clear that whenever I generate anger, hatred, ill will, I am the first victim of my negativity. I become so miserable, so unhappy. Similarly, if one steals something belonging to somebody else, one has to generate enormous amount of greed. And when one commits sexual misconduct, one has to generate tremendous amount of lust, passion. Similarly, whenever one generates any unwholesome action at the vocal level, speaks lies or speaks harsh words, some impurity or the other has to be generated first in the mind. A good Vipassana meditator will immediately understand that, look, I have generated some negativity in the mind, some impurity in the mind, and I am suffering so much. It makes me so much miserable. I am harming myself. What I am doing? Before harming anybody else, I have started harming myself. Then the words of Buddha become so clear. Pubbe hanati attanang paccha hanati supare. First you harm yourself. You kill your own peace and harmony before you kill anybody else, before you kill the peace and harmony of anybody else. you start harming yourself. And nobody wants to harm oneself. Nobody wants to live a miserable life out of ignorance. One keeps on taking such action, keeps on generating such impurity, and keeps on harming oneself. This becomes so clear, not by these lectures, but by experience. So it becomes so clear, when I live a moral life, I am not only obliging the society, I am obliging myself. I want to keep myself happy, and that is why I am living a moral life. Therefore, although the teaching is the same in every religion, the same teaching, live a moral life. Don't perform any unwholesome action which will harm others, which will disturb the peace and harmony of others, is there in every religion. But look, a great difference with the teaching of Buddha. You go to the depth and you understand you are harming yourself. And how to reach that stage where you can understand at experiential level that I have started harming myself. He gave a path of vipassana. Every religion teaches that be the master of your own mind. Don't become the slave of the mind. Control the mind. Concentrate the mind. That is there in teaching of every religion. But this great enlightened person, he also teaches how to control the mind. But there is deeper reason for that. How to control the mind? He gave us a teaching where we are asked to concentrate our mind on a small area with the awareness of the breath coming in, going out, which can be practiced by one and all. It is not connected with any sect, is not connected with any tradition. Anybody can do it. It is natural. The breath is natural with everybody. Breath coming in, breath going out. A universal technique was given. Mind gets concentrated. But not only that, mind becomes so sharp and so sensitive, it starts feeling physical sensations on this part of the body. It becomes so sensitive that it can feel sensations throughout the body. Pleasant sensations, unpleasant sensation, neutral sensation. Every moment there is some sensation or the other in the body, one is now able to feel those sensations. Therefore, it becomes clear that the concentration of the mind must take you to the next step where you feel the sensations and you can understand by feeling your own sensations that, look, I have started harming myself. Whenever I break morality, I harm myself. At the experiential level, it becomes clearer and clearer. Moreover, as one keeps on feeling these sensations, one starts realizing that whatever the sensation may be, it has the same characteristic of arising, passing away, arising, passing away, constantly changing. This becomes clearer again at the experiential level. By continuous practice, the habit pattern of the mind starts changing. The old habit pattern was to react with craving whenever there is a pleasant sensation, to react with aversion whenever there is unpleasant sensation. Now this bad behavior pattern, behavior habit starts changing. You are coming out of it. So the habit changes by experience, having the experience of the truth at the deepest level of the mind. And this is not only an intellectual game or an emotional or devotional game. Very hard criminals, when they start practicing it, they start realizing that every moment I am generating some negativity or the other, although I am in prison, and yet I generate negativity. Look, I am harming myself. I am making myself miserable. And the habit pattern starts changing. And this is applicable not only for the criminals who are in prison. For me, everyone outside the prison is also a prisoner. Prisoner of one's own habit pattern, unwholesome habit pattern. And therefore, anyone belonging to any tradition, belonging to any country, any religion, when practices vipassana, starts coming out of this prison of the wrong habit pattern. Therefore, today there is no religion in the world, no religion whose followers are not attending 10-day vipassana courses. Even leaders of different traditions, different religions come to the courses and feel themselves quite successful, and they don't say that they are converted to this religion or that religion. They are converted to peace and harmony. Therefore, it becomes very clear that every religion of the world have the same teaching, live a moral life, have a disciplined mind, have a pure mind, full of love, compassion, goodwill. Every religion teaches that, but here is a practice, how to achieve it. It is not merely a sermon. Therefore, as I came from another tradition, going much deep in that tradition, I found that I am doing nothing against the old tradition, but it is to make it fruitful, I can go deeper. So also, people from different religions, they don't feel that my religion is bad and this is good. They feel very happy because they find a way now how to live a moral life, how to control the mind, and how to purify the mind, acceptable to one and all. Therefore, I feel all the more grateful to my motherland, which preserved the Sangha of this country, preserved not only the words of Buddha, but also the technique of Vipassana in its pristine purity for centuries together. I also feel that perhaps this is what Dhamma desired, this is what my teacher desired, that I must first get myself established in Dhamma as much as possible and then train people in a way where they don't feel hurt. If I say your religion is bad, look, this religion is so good, this is not the proper way of teaching Dhamma. I tell them, you also want to live a moral life, you also want to have a controlled mind, you also want to have a pure mind. Look, there is a way, try, and a way which is universal, non-sectarian, and people follow it and they get the same benefit. And that is why you find people from different countries who have taken Vipassana courses, who got benefited from this wonderful technique, feel so grateful to this country, the country of Dhamma, and they pay a visit to this country. They come here like pilgrims. From centuries, people of this country have been going to India, the country where Dhamma originated, as pilgrims. And now look, a reverse process has started. People from that country, and not only from that country, people from different countries of the world are visiting my motherland as pilgrims. People should keep on going to India on pilgrimage, because after all, that is the land of Buddha, that is the land of Dhamma. Every Buddha arises in that land, and Dhamma arises in that land, and pure Sangha arises in that land. Although it has lost now Dhamma, but still the land is very pure. People should go for pilgrimage, but here is living Dhamma. People should also come to this country as pilgrims. So, my request is for the countrymen of my motherland, if you have already taken courses of Vipassana, see that you get more and more strengthened in this technique, and those who have not yet taken courses, take 10-day courses, learn this technique, and be a good example for the whole world. More and more people around the world will take you as a good example, and they will also start practicing. My deep Dhamma wish is that my motherland may become a lighthouse, lighthouse of Dhamma, and give light of Dhamma to the suffering humanity around the world, to dispel all the darkness of ignorance and misery around the world. May you all keep growing in Dhamma. May all the suffering humanity around the world get pure Dhamma and come out of misery. May all be happy, be peaceful, be liberated, liberated, liberated. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.